Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can find me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Appreciate you guys being here. It is part two today of our Ranking the Packers series. Yesterday, we went 90 through 61. Today, we will go 60 through 31. And then tomorrow will be our top 30 players on this Packers roster. I do think this is a fun exercise for a variety of different reasons. I think number one, it's just fun to kind of go through and try to rank these players from 90 to 1. I think number two, it's a different way of looking at the roster. We get sort of so honed in on who's the 53? Who's going to ultimately make this team? Who's, you know, how many quarterbacks? How many running backs? How many? That's great. And you ultimately do have to come to that conclusion at some point of which 53 players are on your team. But one of the things that you always want to be cognizant of as you get to that final deadline, that cut down and release so many players and subject them to waivers, is which players do you want to make sure you're not subjecting to waivers? And I did a whole episode on this about a year ago of how the 53-man roster is mattering less and less from a actual how do we put together a roster for like this week sort of thing. And what it's becoming more of is who are your best players and the ones that you want to make sure are on this team no matter what. The reason being is because you do have a 16-man practice squad, because you do have the ability to call players up from that practice squad. So if you don't have a extra, you know, tight end or an extra whatever it might be, you can call those players up on game day from your practice squad. And that's why it's more important to keep your top players and make sure that you're not subjecting them to waivers where another team might be tempted to claim them and put them on their roster. Or the other thing too is let's take Grant Dubose or a Malik Heath or one of those sort of players. If you release them, and even if they don't get claimed, you might have the clear and obvious assumption that they'll just go back on the practice squad. You'll bring them back. And more often than not, that is the case. But I've talked about this. If I'm Grant Dubose, if I am Samori Toure, if I'm Malik Heath, and I don't make this 53-man roster, I'm probably going hunting for a different team's practice squad. Reason being, you've got five, or if Malik Heath makes the roster, six really young, talented wide receivers that are not going anywhere for the foreseeable future. Watson, Dobbs, Reed, Wicks, Bo Melton, and then Malik Heath, these are all really young wide receivers. If you didn't crack the 53 this year and you didn't crack that top six wide receivers this year, what are my odds that it's going to be next year or the following year? Whereas there are other teams in the league where I think a Samori Toure or a Grant Dubose could very easily be their fifth or sixth wide receiver, dependent upon how their roster ends up shaking out. So if I were those, the agent for those players, I would say, hey, I actually kind of recommend that you maybe go to a different team. So again, if you think that a Grant Dubose, for example, I think he's a perfect example of this, is a player that you want to make sure doesn't go anywhere, you might have to create a little extra space on your roster. Now, we're not ready for that with Dubose yet. He's going to have to go out and have a really good training camp and a really good preseason in order to get to that point. But if he does, those are the sort of conversations that take place. And as we go through this list today, number 60 through number 31, this is really a huge group of these fringe roster guys, of specialists, of role players, a lot of draft picks that are a little bit more of a projection right now. But this is also a list of players that will have a big role and a big impact on this team. And it might not be all of them. In fact, I can guarantee it, almost guarantee it will not be. But overall, this group today will have a very large say in where sort of the floor is for this team. We hear it all the time. Sometimes it's not your best 10 players, but it's your weakest links. And these are players that will play, like I said, significant roles. Some of these guys will be starters, and how they play, and if they can up their level and become even better players, Green Bay's floor rises. Those weak points on the roster become afterthoughts. And that's why this group of players today is very important. And again, we will kick it off going 60 through 31. Before we get there, a recap of not all the players we went through yesterday. I highly recommend going through and listening to that episode if you have not done so already. But just to kind of give you an idea where we left off, 65 was Donovan Jennings, the undrafted free agent guard. 64 was Kadeem Telfert, undrafted free agent from a season ago, tackle guard. 63 was the international pathway program sensation, Kenneth Odemegwu. 62 was Christian Welch, special teams specialist, off-ball linebacker, guy who was on the 53 for the majority of last year. And then 61 was Henry Pearson, fullback, H-back, the only guy on the team that really sort of fits that role. So that's where we left off yesterday. We will pick up with number 60 today, and I'm going to start with Robert Rochelle. Number 60, Robert Rochelle is an interesting player on this roster. I think a lot of people might just write him off and say, all right, well, you've got Jaire Alexander, you've got Keyshawn Nixon, Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine, Corey Ballantyne, and Kalen King. You've got your six. They're probably not keeping seven. Also, you've got Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, some of those guys that can play that slot corner as well. Again, probably another reason why you don't need seven. But I do think there will be a legitimate battle here between Robert Rochelle and Kalen King. And I know on paper, it might just seem like that's just going to clearly and obviously go to Kalen King. And maybe that ends up being the case. But let's not forget, number one, that Robert Rochelle was a 53-man roster player a season ago after they picked him up off of the Panthers practice squad. So let's not forget that. Let's not forget that this was considered a very, very, very weak draft class on the end of day three of the draft, meaning fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. In fact, a lot of people consider the sixth and seventh round guys players that would normally be undrafted free agent types in most drafts, but were a little bit different in this draft because a lot of people with the transfer situation or the transfer portal and guys staying an extra year because of COVID, you ended up with a weaker draft class. So the end of the seventh round was really like priority undrafted free agents kind of at best. Now, I think everyone's excited about Kalen King and that Green Bay was able to get him at that spot. But we saw a season ago, Green Bay released 2 7th round picks at cutdown time, Grant Dubose, who they were able to get back in the practice squad, and Lou Nichols, who they were not able to do so with. So I don't think that it's just this immediate foregone conclusion that Kalen King wins that spot. And with Robert Rochelle, you have somebody that is a core special teams player for you. And when you do get to the back of the roster decisions, it kind of comes down to sometimes that sixth corner, for example, is a perfect example of this. Do you want a young developmental player like Kalen King, who may not be ready to go right now on special teams or on defense, but he has some upside? Or do you want the guy that can be an emergency corner for you right now and can be a core special teamer for you? And for a team that's ready to compete right now, having that guy who can be a core special teamer for you may end up being more important. If I were betting on it today, do I think Kalen King ends up making it over Robert Rochelle? I do. Do I think it's probably like 66-33 for Kalen King to Robert Rochelle? I do. But I do think Robert Rochelle will get his name in this conversation. Had a beautiful interception in minicamp, to kind of end the pre-training camp offseason. And I do think he's going to be a player that has the ability to make this 53-man roster. Injuries could also play a part here, or he could just easily make the practice squad. And by making the practice squad, be sort of a guy like Corey Ballantyne a year ago, where you're thinking, all right, he's a practice squad corner and you're not expecting anything. Gets the call up because of injuries throughout the course of the season. You're expecting him just to play special teams. All of a sudden, there's a need at corner. Robert Rochelle's in the game. What does he give you? Can he play like Corey Ballantyne did a season ago? I think it's interesting. I'm excited to see what he can kind of bring to special teams clearly, but if he can make that a battle with Kalen King, and I think that will be something to monitor at that number six corner position. Number 59, a player I mentioned already, Grant Dubose. This is a player who I think has something more to give to this team than he had the opportunity to display a season ago. Now, when he came in as a rookie, he looked light. Like, he looked like he needed to put on some, one of my favorite terms, some real functional strength. And I think he's done a little bit of that. I don't think he's gone overboard, or I don't think he's like one of the, oh my goodness, he's, you know, unbelievable shape or anything like that. But you can tell he's a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. And I do think that there were signs even at the end of training camp last year that this could be somebody who could make some plays for you. Now, he is in the very unenvious position of probably having to battle Samori Toure for the number 7 spot on this wide receiver depth chart. That makes it very, very tough, because usually you keep 6. And even at 6, Malik Heath, when all the wide receivers were healthy last year, was not able to make it onto the 48-man game day roster. So you're pushing, you know, Samori Toure versus Grant Dubose just for number 7. And number 7 probably doesn't even make the team. And even if somehow it does, you're still a step or two away from actually even being active on game days. And that's kind of what we talked about of, hey, if you don't make it, you may want to look for a team elsewhere to give you a better opportunity. But I do like Grant Dubose. He was a pick that I really enjoyed coming out of the draft a season ago. I do think he has some legitimate playmaking ability. They did call him up to the active roster at the end of last year, although I think they called him up and then made him inactive for the game, which again just goes to show you the wide receiver depth that they have. But I do think they still think highly of him, and I do think his name will be a part of the conversation. Number 58 is Emmanuel Wilson. I go back to last year in preseason where he's ripping off 80-yard runs and showed that he had some burst and some strength and the ability to, you know, find the hole and hit it with pace and just, you know, not mess around, get north and south. I think there's still something there for Emmanuel Wilson, and that's why I say I think he will push AJ Dillon for that number 3 spot. And we've talked about the advantages that Wilson has in that battle. If AJ Dillon is just the better running back, he's going to have a huge opportunity to make the team. But if it's anywhere close, Emmanuel Wilson is cheaper. Emmanuel Wilson is younger. And Emmanuel Wilson has more years of control on his contract, because Dillon will be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this next season. So there are a lot of reasons why you would want to keep, you know, Emmanuel Wilson over AJ Dillon if that battle is close. But the pressure is going to be on Emmanuel Wilson to make sure that it is close. Because I think right now we all sort of expect Dillon to be that number 3. But Wilson's talented. He's got burst. He's got the ability to get upfield. He needs to get even better at pass pro. He needs to get even better catching the ball out of the backfield. And this is going to be a very big offseason for him. If he doesn't make the team, clearly a core practice squad candidate that you feel very comfortable calling up at any given moment if the need should present itself for that running back spot. And he would be able to, I think, answer that bell. But overall, a player I like, it's just this is going to be a very big preseason for him. And he has to sort of carry over any momentum from the preseason last year. Didn't get a ton of opportunity in the regular season. And now he's going to have to kind of prove himself all over again. 57 and 56, I'm going to kind of put together here. 57 is Luke Tenuta. 56 is Caleb Jones. These are two incredibly difficult players to place, I think, at this point. And I think the reason is we've not got to really see them in any real game activity. Caleb Jones, actually both these guys are players that they have put the last two seasons into as sort of red shirt type players. Now, Tenuta last year spent the entire time on IR. The interesting things here, one, with Caleb Jones, they have spent 53-man roster spot on him the last 2 years as an undrafted guy to get to this point. With Tenuta, remember they claimed him 2 years ago. At the end of that season, he was getting active on game day ahead of Rashid Walker, ahead of Caleb Jones. And then last year, he makes the 53 hurt. Then they keep him so that they can hopefully call him back at some point after that initial cutdown gets done the next day. They place him on IR with, again, the hope that they'd be able to return him. They didn't have to do that. If they didn't think highly of Luke Tenuta, they just wave him injured, and then nobody claims him in all likelihood, and he reverts to IR for Green Bay and stays on the team. So they could have done that without risking a 53-man roster spot and kept somebody else around and not subjected them to waivers. But they clearly thought enough of Tenuta that they put him on the 53 with the hopes that he would be able to come back and play at some point last season. But he wasn't. He was never able to. They did open up his window to practice and participate, which he did a little bit of, but was never able to get past that point and never actually got added back on the 53-man roster. And now you find both of these players in an absolutely must-have offseason where it is now or never for both of these guys. They go and they get Andre Dillard in free agency. They draft Travis Glover. there are a lot of offensive linemen, Kadeem Telfort, we talked about yesterday, that are going to be competing for these spots. And I've talked about in the past where this is sort of the breaking point for these sort of developmental offensive tackles. It's that year three where if you're Yosh Nijman, you got 2 years to sort of sit and watch and develop. But now in year three, you're needed. You need to be able to come in and be a serviceable player. He was. He was ready to go, and he ended up starting games and being a big-time depth piece for Green Bay. Alex Light was the opposite. They gave him 2 years to develop on the active roster as a basically a redshirt type of guy. Year three comes around, he's not ready, and he ends up getting released. So this is the do or die moment for both of these guys. And do I think that they can still make a 53? I do, but they're going to have to present themselves as players that are ready to go and ready to step in at any given moment. If they cannot, well, it's probably time to go in a different direction. And that doesn't mean that both of them couldn't be back in a practice squad capacity. And like I said, it doesn't mean that either of them or both of them couldn't make this 53-man roster. But it is paramount for both of these guys that they display that ability now, or they probably are going to have to go through waivers, see if anyone picks them up, and then make that determination if they want to go back on Green Bay's practice squad. The NBA Finals are officially over, and congratulations to the Boston Celtics on winning the championship, as much as it pains me to say as a Milwaukee Bucks fan. But even though the NBA Finals are over, the hoops action doesn't stop on Prize Picks. Women's basketball is just getting started, and young stars like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are making names for themselves, and it's been the most talked about WNBA season ever. And you're not going to want to miss out on the action, period. And of course, with Prize Picks, you could win 100 times your cash watching stars like Breonna Stewart and Aja Wilson ball out every single week. Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, Georgia, and of course, Wisconsin. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. So join in on the fun and become part of the Prize Picks community today. I do have to say that I am a little bit bummed that Cameron Brink recently suffered a torn ACL, but I'm still super stoked to watch some WNBA action this week. I'm going to be going heavy on Arike Ogunbowale and Alyssa Thomas this week, and might be even on the lookout for some Kelsey Plum three-pointer options as well. Either way, it should be an exciting week of WNBA action that's even more exciting with Prize Picks. The best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. 55 could probably be lower on this list, could maybe be higher on this list. I think he probably is right in this range. That's Anders Carlson. I think the clear leader in the clubhouse to be the kicker still at this point. Yes, they've got three kickers on the roster, which means they mean business, that they are not just handing this over to Anders, that they are not saying everything's good and Carlson's just going to be our guy. But like I said, I do think he's been the best kicker so far in OTA and minicamp. That's not saying a ton. Podlesny already has been released, and Joseph and Anders both had their struggles at times. Now, of course, they go and get a third kicker as well. So where you want to place Anders, you know, draft pick from a season ago, somebody they clearly thought highly of, and a position that there usually is a little bit of volatility early in kickers' careers. Does he settle down? I did think he ended on a pretty strong note in mini camps and at the end of OTAs. Like I said, I did think that he clearly looked like the best kicker out of the three so far. Now, again, we have not had the ability so far to see James Turner kick, and that'll be an interesting, you know, addition to that kicker battle. But I think, again, 55 seems about right, and probably somebody that not only is on the 53-man roster, but will clearly have a very big impact on the team this season if, in fact, he does win that kicker job. Number 54 is Samori Toure. We are about a year removed from Samori Toure really coming off a impressive OTA and minicamp, and even the start of training camp. There was a decent amount of buzz surrounding Samori Toure at this time last year. Not too dissimilar to some of the stuff like we heard about Brenton Cox I personally saw out of Brenton Cox this offseason. And, you know, some of those guys take that buzz and they run with it and they continue to progress. And others, it just fades away and it fades out. And that's sort of what we saw last year with Samori Toure. He could not find any defined role for himself. It clearly did not help that every single wide receiver that Green Bay invested in was pretty much a hit, right? Like they hit on Jaden Reed. They hit on Dontavian Wicks. They hit on Malik Heath as an undrafted free agent. And they still had Christian Watson and they still had Romeo Doubs and all of a sudden, and then Bo Melton ends up hitting as a practice squad guy they pick up from the year before. And all of a sudden, like Samori Toure goes from somebody that you're thinking this guy might end up having to be the number three or four wide receiver for Green Bay to being well below everyone on the depth chart. Now, he still played a little bit a season ago, still got some opportunities. And unfortunately for Toure, never really got the opportunity to kind of make the most of those. So sort of in the same vein as Tenuta and Caleb Jones, this is sort of a now or never sort of moment for Toure. And he, like Grant Dubose, is in this unenviable position of having to compete with the other guys. And that's not even including the undrafted wide receivers that we talked about yesterday. Like he's going to have a hard time competing just for that, for that number seven spot. And maybe Malik Heath falls off or something like that, but it is almost impossible to imagine Dubose or Malik Heath or any of these guys that aren't in the top five that they could get in the top five. Like that's how good the top five is. So tough position for Toure. I still think there's talent there. Would be a beautiful practice squad guy, right? He can be a returner. He plays a little bit on special teams, can be a wide receiver that can come in and give you some snaps if you absolutely need it. But if he wants to make the 53, this is going to be a huge preseason and training camp for him. All right, now we get to actually number 53. And again, we've already had all the kickers exhausted, all the long snappers exhausted. So the 53 that we get to at this point can't all make the team. You're going to have to keep some specialists. And I'm sure there's probably a couple guys that we mentioned, maybe a Donovan Jennings, maybe a Emmanuel Wilson, maybe a Luke Tenuta or a Caleb Jones that actually make the 53 too. But now we get to our guys that you want to start seeing. All right, how do we kind of keep these guys around if we possibly can? Number 53 on the list is Tyler Davis. And Tyler Davis has always been a bit of a lightning rod for discussion when it comes to him as a player. He had a little bit of buzz when Green Bay picked him up off of waivers. And I think, generally he got a minuscule amount of snaps that first season and he looked good. And then the preseason came the following year, which would have been 2022. And he had a brutal preseason and then didn't follow it up with anything of significance in the regular season. And then I thought last year, before he went out with the injury, I thought Davis looked good. And the other thing you need to remember is in 2022, he played more special team snaps than anyone on the team. So he's a core special teamer. He came into last offseason looking really good. I thought looking improved from his first 2 years. And then, of course, he has the injury, the torn ACL, and he's still recovering. In OTAs and minicamp so far this year, he was still in the rehab group. So this is a tough player to place where clearly they think a lot of him from a special team standpoint. I would think that right now he's clearly tight end number four on the roster, which they have kept four tight ends in multiple seasons in the past. And I do think he has a legitimate chance to make the 53, but how he returns from injury and if he shows that he can take a step from where he was 2 seasons ago, those are going to be the questions that decide his fate and if he can actually make this team, but certainly somebody that's going to be in the conversation in most part due to his special teams ability. Speaking of which, number 52, somebody who is in fact real, that is Zane Anderson. Man, I almost had Zane yesterday on my list yesterday, and then I moved some things around. He's another player that's really tough to place, but he was on the 53 for the entirety of last season, just had a mini camp where he had 3 interceptions in a given practice. I do think that his special teams ability puts him clearly in the, sort of circle of players who can legitimately make this 53-man roster. But that safety position is just brutal for everyone right now because you know McKinney's not going anywhere. It's one thing if they drafted 3 safeties, but like one was Bullard and then 2 were 7th rounders or something like that. But you're not cutting a 4th rounder in Evan Williams. You're probably not cutting a 5th rounder in Ketan Oladapo. So McKinney, Oladapo, Evan Williams, and Javon Bullard are probably, clearly Bullard and McKinney are locks. Evan Williams is all but a lock and Oladapo probably a lock as well. So lock those 4 guys in. You have Anthony Johnson Jr., who has been the sort of de facto starter so far next to Xavier McKinney in OTAs and minicamps, 7th round pick from a season ago. And then you've got Zane Anderson, who was on the 53 for the entirety of last season as a safety. and a core special teamer. And then you've got Benny Sapp, who was also on the 53 for a good chunk of last year as a core special teamer. That is a tough safety group to crack. They're not going to keep seven. Maybe they don't keep six. Maybe they keep five. But if Zane Anderson wants to make that number five spot and actually make the team, probably needs to beat out Anthony Johnson Jr., probably does that by playing special teams or keep having three interception days at practice. But I do think he's talented enough and good enough to be an actual true 53-man guy. I do think he can be that emergency safety that plays for you in a pinch and you're not really losing a ton. And again, can be somebody that you count on as a core special teamer. So he again will be very much in the conversation for making that final roster. Number 51 is one of our first draft picks here. That's Kalen King. We talked about it, right? Robert Rochelle versus Kalen King is probably going to be that number six cornerback battle. I think we all like the idea of Kalen King, the prospect of Kalen King, somebody that in 2022 in college looked like he was going to be one of the top corners in the 2023 draft. Then 2023 comes around as a really tough season, did not live up to expectations, ends up falling all the way to the bottom of the seventh round. And now Green Bay either found another one of their classic seventh round steals, or what we saw in 2023 from Kalen King was the real Kalen King. And 2022 was a fluke, and he ends up being a practice squad guy. So I again will say, I don't think that there's just this like lock for Kalen King to make the roster. I would bet on it again if I were betting on it today, but he's gonna have to show himself. Late seventh round picks aren't given anything in this league. You're not guaranteed. We know Goody likes to keep his draft picks, and we do know there's talent there for Kalen King. I think the benefit for him too is he's already getting some work in the slot. So if he can show that he's got slot versatility, outside corner versatility, and by the way, there were many draft experts that thought that Kalen King would ultimately end up being a safety. So he could be somebody that cross trains a little bit there as well, and maybe gives you versatility to play slot, outside corner, and safety, and that could give him even better odds to make the 53-man roster. Number 50 is a guy that I am extremely excited about based almost on body type alone, but I think he has some real ability to potentially become something in Green Bay. That is Travis Glover. Talk about a guy that looks the part. This is a big physical dude. He showed off some of his run blocking ability already in OTAs and mini camps. And I think he's only going to continue to get better. This is a guy that wasn't set to go to the Senior Bowl, got called up at the last moment. There's always questions of, well, will they be able to fit in or are they out of their league? He fit in perfectly at the Senior Bowl, looked the part. And then Green Bay went out, got him in the draft late on day three. And I think this is somebody that is a classic Green Bay Packers draft pick that they are going to draft and develop. One of their true, abilities is to find day three offensive linemen and plug them in and find ways to make them starters over time. A lot of that is the draft process and evaluating these guys. A lot of it is the developmental process, but they do as good of a job of any team in the league of finding and developing offensive linemen. And I think Travis Glover can be the next one on that list. 49 is another offensive tackle. That is Andre Dillard. Dillard is somebody that is clearly a free agent signing that is going to have to earn his spot, that already received a lot of starting snaps in OTAs and mini camps. But I just did that full breakdown. Man, was it a lot of ugly tape in Tennessee a season ago. He has not lived up to that first round expectation when Philly picked him up in the first round in the same draft as Rashawn Gary and Darnell Savage. Was that 2019? And again, talk about a guy that's on a now or never situation, went from first round pick to big free agent contract to vet minimum, no signing bonus for Green Bay. I think he has a real legit chance. And I think he ends up on this 53. And I think they're just trying to give him the opportunity to be this year's Yosh Nijman. If he can be a swing tackle that can fill in a pinch, there's a lot of value there. And hopefully Green Bay can be the team that finally unlocks his ability because it's there. There were some games even on the tapes in Tennessee or in the games in Tennessee where he looked solid. Like he looked like he could go in and you could put him out there and not have to change your offense. But there was a lot of ugly tape and he's going to have to improve from a season ago and certainly not a lock to make this team if he continues to struggle like he did a season ago. But clearly, I think Green Bay wants him to be that swing tackle and he'll get every opportunity to be that. All right, number 48 and 47, we'll talk about these two combined as well. 48, Michael Pratt, 47, Sean Clifford. I think these are two backup quarterbacks that are going to battle for that number two spot. I think the other one will still, whoever ends up number three, will also be in a position to still make the 53-man roster. Not sure Green Bay is going to want to release either of these guys and subject them to waivers. I do think that this will be a true legitimate battle. I think Pratt will push Sean Clifford. I think Clifford has the edge based on experience, but man, Clifford had a really tough minicamp. I think he threw all three of those interceptions to Zane Anderson, threw four interceptions, I believe, in the 2 days of practice in the minicamp period. And then you've got Michael Pratt, who despite, you know, Matt LaFleur defining as somebody who is drinking water through a fire hose and having no idea of what the offense, I think, actually entailed or exactly what he was doing, still looked pretty darn good, which is almost more impressive to me. So this is going to be a fun battle. Can either of these guys be a legitimate good backup to Jordan Love? I don't think we know that yet. And hopefully we never have to find out. But preseason training camp will be huge for both of those quarterbacks. They both get to learn another, you know, for another year for Sean Clifford under, Tom Clements, and for Michael Pratt, a full year under Tom Clements, excuse me. And I think that's going to serve both those guys well, but should be a very, very fun training camp battle to see who ultimately gets that number two QB job. 46, Ketan Oladapo. You know, I don't know exactly what he is going to be for this defense because we haven't had any opportunity to see him yet. So I'm going strictly off of his college shape. I think he can be somebody that plays that hybrid linebacker safety role. Green Bay hasn't had the best success in trying to draft and find that guy. It worked a little bit for Raven Green, but I think Green ultimately trying to play that linebacker spot ended up injured a lot and it didn't work out. Tariq Carpenter, it didn't work out. Josh Jones, it didn't work out. Can Ketan Oladapo be that guy? Or do they just have to play him as a safety? He does project as somebody that can be a core special teamer. He does project as somebody who could blitz well. And I do think he projects as somebody who can play a little bit in the box. Not a little bit, can be a box guy. But then the question is he just a box safety or can he actually play some nickel or dime linebacker as well? Very intriguing player. Super excited to finally see him at training camp. But again, this is a very big projection at this point because we did not even get to see him in any of the practices thus far due to his foot injury. 45, veteran journeyman Eric Wilson. I like Eric Wilson quite a bit. I really do. I think this is somebody who can kind of be like your special teams captain. One of the rare players that is around the age of 30 on this team. A player that's been around for a while and is a very good special teams player. I had that, huge fumble recovery on special teams a season ago. But also, I think he's underrated as a linebacker. I really do. I think, like, if you need him, like, as your number five linebacker, you've got Hopper, you've got McDuffie, you've got Quay, you've got Cooper. But if he's your number five, like, that is a beautiful, gorgeous number five linebacker. Sincerely, I think he can start for you in a pinch, and you're not really concerned about it. And I also think that he does provide you a real legitimate 48-man active roster player because of his special teams ability. So Eric Wilson, not going to break the bank, not going to be anyone that, you know, I don't think anyone's getting Eric Wilson jerseys to wear on game days, but I really do like him in that number five linebacker role. Don't see him going anywhere. And I think it fits him very, very well. You know, not a young developmental player anymore. Doesn't fit the long-term window here in Green Bay, but certainly has a lot to give and I think can help Green Bay this upcoming season. Number 44, Jacob Monk. This is another one, rookie projection here of where he ultimately ends up. Guard center. I think he ultimately ends up as a center in the NFL. That's where he's practiced the most. Don't think he's going to be pushing Josh Myers this upcoming season. I would love if he did, but I think that's probably going to be a little bit of a process. But remember, Myers is a free agent after this upcoming season. The hope would be that Jacob Monk could just take over and, you know, pick right up and be the starting center starting next year. Or if there were injuries to Josh Myers, could Monk be ready? Or do you need to move Zach Tom or Elton Jenkins and need to make those moves around? I think that'll be the interesting aspect for Monk. I think he has it in him. I really do, to be a starting center in this league. But I think the question for him is more going to be the timeline. When will he be ready? Will it be sometime this year? Will it be next year? Or does it just never click for him? Those are going to be sort of the questions he's going to have to answer. But I do think there is a starting caliber center there in Jacob Monk. 43, Anthony Johnson Jr. We talked about the, you know, brutal nature of that safety position and how hard it's going to be to crack, even for Anthony Johnson Jr., who's been, again, the de facto starter next to Xavier McKinney so far. he's going to have to earn it. Javon Bullard's going to come from that spot. Evan Williams isn't going anywhere. Ketan Oladapo is not going anywhere. So like I said, he's going to probably have to battle Benny Sapp and Zane Anderson for that number five safety job. And that's going to probably come down to special teams. And I would give the nod to both Benny Sapp and Zane Anderson as just a pure special teamer over Anthony Johnson Jr. Now, I think Anthony Johnson Jr. has higher upside as a safety, clearly, than either Zane Anderson or Benny Sapp. And those are what ultimately end up being those really interesting conversations. You're keeping a number five safety. What do you want? Do you want the developmental safety, or do you want the guy that's going to help you a lot right now in special teams? And Johnson Jr. might do enough on teams to say, hey, he's good enough on teams. He can still help us there while he develops into hopefully a starting caliber safety down the road. But those are going to be difficult questions for Goody and company to answer on who they want in that number five safety spot. Number 42 is a player I cannot stop thinking about from OTAs and minicamps, and that is Brenton Cox, so much so that I almost wanted to put him higher. I think 42 is even pretty aggressive, just because we've really not seen anything. You know, he barely played, I think, one or two snaps a season ago. Now he's projecting as somebody who's probably the fifth edge rusher. He's still behind Enigbare, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, LVN, and doesn't really have, I don't think, the versatility to kick inside or anything like that. And doesn't really project as a core special teams guy either, which hurts you when you're trying to make a number five edge rusher spot. But my goodness, did he look fantastic in OTAs and mini camps. Like, there were plays where, like, you did a double take because he was almost looking like Rashawn Gary out there at times with converting speed to power. So listen, when pads come on, it'll be a different story for Brenton Cox. And, you know, Matt LaFleur mentioned, you know, it's a little bit easier to kind of get under these guys because they're not wearing pads for these bull rushers. And they try to make it so these guys don't bull rush as much because, again, it's a disadvantage for the offensive lineman with no pads on. But it still was intriguing enough. Yeah, how he was winning was what was impressive. It wasn't that he was winning. It was how he was winning. Cannot wait to watch Brenton Cox in training camp and preseason. Number 41 is one of my guys. Love this dude. And I think he's, you know, even though he's a number three guy at his position, is still going to have a pretty significant role in this team. And that's Ben Sims. I wholeheartedly believe that Ben Sims can be a really good number two tight end in this league. And it just so happens that the Packers have Musgrave and Kraft. So he ends up slotting in as the number three. Can play special teams. Good run blocker, good pass protector, can still get better in both of those ways. But I think where he even has more to give is as a pass catcher. This is what he did in college more often than not, was he was more of a receiving tight end. I think he's got more run after the catch than he had the opportunity to display a season ago. And I think he's got more receiving chops of just finding holes in zones, getting open. And I think he's going to look even better in year two. Really like Ben Sims. And maybe this is high for him, but I feel like I could have even put him a little bit higher if I wanted to. That's my thoughts and viewpoints on Sims. Number 40, AJ Dillon. We just sort of know what we're getting right now with AJ Dillon, right? And now he is phenomenal shape. And hopefully this is the year he sort of gets back to playing at the level where he did. I think really his second year was probably his best year. There's still a really good player there in AJ Dillon. But I think you ultimately have a limited ceiling knowing that he's never going to be the dynamic guy. He's never going to be the game breaker, but he can still be sort of the guy that you trust in the run game, doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't put the ball on the ground, you know, gets better as the season goes along, plays well in cold weather, and can be that bruiser in between the tackles for you. But this is a league where more and more these skill position players, you need to have game breaking ability. And Dillon hasn't had that. And last year was his worst season as a Packer. Do I think he can get back to where he was earlier in his career? I do. Do I think he's going to be ultra motivated by the fact that he didn't get that big contract in free agency? I do. But I do think he's also going to have to stave off Emmanuel Wilson and the rest of the running backs on the roster. And I think he's going to have to earn that number three job. I believe he will. I believe there's still a lot for AJ Dillon to give to this team. Hopefully the AI simulation was right. Not that he has to be the guy, but that he can put up 1,200 yards and 12 touchdowns in a season. But this will be another big year for AJ Dillon, because if he can go out and have a big season, then maybe he can still get that big free agent contract next year in free agency. Number 39, Sean Ryan. As I've talked about, I'm not quite in the, yep, Sean Ryan's ready to go be the starting right guard and we don't have to worry about anything at that right guard position. Sean Ryan had a brutal rookie season. Showed up out of shape, was completely out of favor with the team, then got suspended for, the I actually don't want to say it because I forget exactly. I think it was some sort of, you know, performance enhancing type of thing, but I don't quote me on that. I know it was some sort of league suspension for something to that regard, but get suspended at the end of the year. And yeah, I'm honestly thinking going into the beginning of last year that I didn't think Sean Ryan was even guaranteed to make the roster, like based off of how brutal his rookie year went, even as a third round guy. And then he comes back and he shows he meant business in year two. And kudos to Sean Ryan for really turning that around, because we've seen in the past, it doesn't always go that way. But he came back dedicated. He came back in much better shape. He came back ready to compete. And so much so that he pushed John Runyon Jr. through the second half of that season at that right guard position. But he still only played a couple hundred snaps on the year, and they weren't the best couple hundred snaps in the world. I do really like him as a run blocker. The pass protection is a little bit leaky at times, and that's what he's going to have to really take a step at and get better at. Do I think he's got a great chance to be the starter at right guard? Yes. Do I think he can take another step in year three, similar to what he did in year two? I absolutely do. And I hope he does, because I do think he would be a really big asset as a run blocker on that offensive line if he can get a little bit better at pass protection. But we know Jordan Morgan's going to be involved in this conversation. Rashid Walker's going to be involved in the conversation. There are going to be multiple guys that are fighting for that, you know, sort of fifth and final starting offensive line position. So I think Sean Ryan's got a great chance to win it, but I want to see him take that next step and be an even better pass protector this upcoming season. All right, 38, Corey Ballantyne. What a season last year. We talked about it. We thought he was going to be a practice squad guy, even if he got called up just special teams. Well, he ends up getting called up, not only playing special teams, but starting a ton of games for the team, playing in that huge stretch against the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Lions, where they went 3-0 against some really good offenses and some really good quarterbacks. He showed that he can come in and start in a pinch when you need him to. He showed depth. He's now showing versatility. They're using him a little bit in the slot. This OTA and minicamp, core special teamer still. They give him enough guaranteed where I think he's probably pretty close to a lock. They could release him and eat some of it if they really needed to, but I fully expect Ballantyne to be on the team, and he was one of the more fun stories from a season ago. Another fun story, undrafted free agent, number 37, Malik Heath. Malik Heath showed up early often, showed that he could be somebody that they can put on the field and be, you know, what do they call Alan Lazard, that goon mentality of he's going to go out and do the dirty work and block people. He has that. And then he came up with some big catches, had that play where he dropped the touchdown, and then on the very next play, caught an even tougher one to get the touchdown. There's a player there in Malik Heath. Now, this is sort of, I think, in the Jared Boykin, Geronimo Allison, you know, that undrafted wide receiver, you know, that you probably can play some, but never is really super dynamic or a game breaker, but you can use him, you can utilize him. And I think an Alan Lazard type career arc isn't out of the question, which would be a huge find for an undrafted free agent wide receiver, just like Alan Lazard was. So he's still going to have to earn it. I think he's clearly the number six guy right now behind your top four, and then Bo Melton as five. Malik Heath is six, and I think he slots in ahead of Samore Toure and Grant Dubose and the rest of the wide receivers, but he's going to want to fight to get active on game days. Special teams is going to be huge for him, and he's still, as an undrafted guy who with a stacked wide receiver room, he's still going to have to earn that 53-man roster spot again this offseason. 36, Tyron Hopper, third-round pick. Really liked what I saw in OTA and minicamp. You know, I know people maybe jumped on the YouTube short that I put out and saying the amount of missed tackles were unacceptable from Hopper in college, and I still stand by that. I agree with that. But I've liked what I've seen. Like, go back and listen to that full episode I did on the deep dive. There's a lot of things to really like about Tyron Hopper as well. And I thought a lot of those upside type flashes that we saw in college showed up in OTAs and minicamps. There were multiple stops he made at or behind the line of scrimmage where he, you know, got sideline to sideline or jackknifed his way into the backfield. Not all that dissimilar to some of the plays that Edgerrin Cooper made. So he's got good speed. He's got good athleticism. And I think he's somebody that can help this team on defense. If he can clean up the tackling, there's a legit linebacker there. But that's going to be a big key for him. And hopefully the tackling issues don't rear their ugly head. But for anyone that thinks I don't like, I'm actually very intrigued and excited about Tyron Hopper. So yeah, the film at times in college was a little bit touch and go, but the player, the body type, the athleticism, it showed up already. And that definitely is translatable in the NFL. 35, same position, Isaiah McDuffie. knows the defense probably better than anyone. Of course, I'm sure Jeff Hafley's defense has evolved over time, going from Boston College, to what it's become now and being an NFL defensive coordinator. There's been certainly time that has passed there as well, but just knowing Hafley and knowing some of the core concepts that I'm sure he likes to run will be advantageous to McDuffie. Another guy that can play a ton of special teams for you, can start at linebacker in a pinch, great instincts, knows where to go on the field, is very assignment sure, has actually better athleticism than he gets credit for as well. He's a pretty big time RAS guy. So there's a lot to like about McDuffie. Well, this is his final year and his contract will be a free agent after the season. So we'll see what he can bring in this final season and if this Jeff Hafley defense can unlock him even a little bit more. But somebody I clearly expect to make the 53 and be a rotational linebacker if needed for Hafley and this defense. 34, fourth round pick, Evan Williams. Liked what I saw. A lot of flexibility and versatility. Think he can play some post safety, some box safety. Think he can play in the slot a little bit. Loved how communicative he was. And I think he's going to push for that safety spot. Now, I fully expect Javon Bullard to win it, but I don't think Evan Williams is going to make it easy. He plays and almost like, just kind of communicates. And like, let's put it this way. To the blind eye, if you just went and watched him at practice, you would expect that he was like a third or fourth year veteran out there, that he wasn't a rookie. So that goes a long way. And even if he doesn't earn that safety spot, if it is Bullard and David McKinney, which I think we all expect, I think they're going to find ways to get Evan Williams on the field and also probably projects as a player who can be a core special teamer for Rich Bisaccia as well. Number 33 was one of the hardest players to place on this. If you want to put this player five or six spots lower, you could. I don't really think you need to go any higher. In fact, I think this is probably his ceiling on it for right now. But that's Colby Wooden. Fourth round pick from a season ago. Didn't do a ton. Carl Brooks clearly, made that step ahead of him. And then you still had Wyatt and Slayton and Clark and really a solid rotation with just those four guys. But the thing with Wooden was he just needed to put on strength and he went and put on, I think, over 10 pounds of muscle. Like he looks bigger, he looks stronger, and they're cross-training him at defensive end and defensive tackle. And when he was in there as a pass rusher, I still liked him last year. He still graded well for me, even though he didn't have the ability to really hold up at the point of attack in the run game as well, because he was just undersized. Don't sleep on Colby Wooden. This is a good football player. Again, fourth round pick a season ago. He can still make a name for himself. I like him in this spot. Again, could you move him down maybe a little bit? Sure. Would have no argument with that. But I think he's going to be a helpful player and somebody that's active on game day, especially with that, defensive end and defensive tackle versatility. Number 32 is your first round pick, Jordan Morgan. Tough start in OTAs and mini camps. And part of that is him trying to learn four different positions, coming from college to the NFL, only played left tackle in college. Clearly the talent is there. You can see it. It is. You don't need to be an NFL scout to get on the practice field and be like, oh yeah, Jordan Morgan looks insanely talented at offensive tackle, but or guard or wherever they're playing him. But he's got a long way to go. Multiple false starts, got beat on numerous occasions. It's going to take some time here, but the talent is there. The talent is evident. Now it's just up to Adam Stenovich as the offensive coordinator, Luke Buckus as the offensive line coach to figure out how they can get him on the field, how he can help this team the most, what's his best position, and can he start honing in on and mastering maybe one of those positions or two of those positions a little bit more rather than four where you could tell his head was swimming a little bit. And last but not least for today, number 31, Kingsley Enagbare, rotational defensive end. It'll be interesting to see of all the defensive ends, I think his fit in the 4-3, putting his hand in the dirt is the most intriguing, meaning I don't like Smith and Gary and LVN all fit perfectly. I think Enagbare is a little bit more of a projection here and not knowing exactly how he's going to play in that role. I think he's going to be totally fine though. Another player that can play some special teams for you. I think he has more to give. I really do. I think this is the year where he has the ability to make a real significant jump. Love the fact that he's not coming off a torn ACL like we thought he was going to be. That's just a good football player and somebody that you need. Yeah, he might just be the fourth edge rusher and maybe Brenton Cox even pushes him a little bit. I don't care. He's good at football. He's going to help you this season and he can come up with some big plays as well. And I do expect a jump from Enagbare. I think there's a lot more of a talented football player than we've even seen unleashed from number 55 so far. And hopefully this is the year that he recognizes it and does take that big step. All right. So to recap for today, Robert Rochelle, Grant Dubose, Emmanuel Wilson, Luke Tenuta, Caleb Jones, Anders Carlson, Samore Toure, Tyler Davis, Zane Anderson, Kalen King, Travis Glover, Andre Dillard, Michael Pratt, Sean Clifford, Kitano Ladapo, Eric Wilson, Jacob Monk, Anthony Johnson Jr., Bretton Cox, Ben Sims, AJ Dillon, Sean Ryan, Corey Ballantyne, Malik Heath, Tyron Hopper, Isaiah McDuffie, Evan Williams, Colby Wooden, Jordan Morgan, and Kingsley Enagbare. That is going to do it for me today. Top 30 will be up tomorrow. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Brad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Dan Guestford, and Peter Rataka. I'll see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.